Okay, good morning, everyone. It is my pleasure to really take the baton this morning and begin to think about the possibilities for moving forward. What we've heard so far is a discourse on the concept of sexualization, really beginning to unpack sex and sexual health. And what I hope to do over the next 10 minutes is to begin to think about why should we be focusing on sexual health, both at the governmental level? Why should our STD HIV programs be looking at this frame in a very different way? I then want to reflect on what are some of the potential roles of government in promoting sexual health. And then I'm going to begin a conversation on the way CDC is beginning to think about this concept and ways in which we're beginning to think about moving forward with promoting sexual health in the United States. So you will have already heard and seen a number of definitions this morning regarding sexual health. I'd like to put the WHO definition back on the screen because, again, I think there's some key nuggets within the definition which are important for us to underpin or undergird what we're trying to do from a public health perspective when it comes to sexual health. It is moving us, first of all, away from the disease-oriented model, moving towards a model that looks at physical, emotional, mental, and social well-being in relation to sexuality. And as the WHO says, it's not merely the absence of disease, dysfunction, or infirmity. What I also like about the definition is that it requires a positive and respectful approach to sexuality and sexual relationships, as well as the possibility of having pleasurable and safe experiences free of coercion, discrimination, and violence. And most of all, the WHO definition is based on the concept of human rights and social justice. For sexual health to be maintained and attained, the sexual rights of persons must be respected, protected, and fulfilled. So this is a huge shift from our current conceptualization of what we're doing in terms of preventing STDs, tracking disease, rather than focusing on health, well-being, and rights of individuals within our society. I think there are a number of reasons why we must focus on sexual health now. And rather than go through reams of data to make the case, what I'd like to do is just basically to distill some key areas or rationales for this focus on sexual health, certainly for the CDC. Clearly, we're seeing changes in disease epidemiology and the outcome patterns and distribution of adverse outcomes within the population. And one of the key features of this epidemiological change is the increasing concentration of disease among the socioeconomically disadvantaged, among minorities, among those with poor access to healthcare services. We are certainly appreciating the important role of the social and structural determinants of these adverse health outcomes. And throughout the conference, I hope you have all had a chance to participate in some of the wonderful discussions regarding the social determinants of STD and HIV transmission in the United States. Clearly, in the US, as with many other Western industrialized countries and countries around the world, we're dealing with silence, we're dealing with stigma and discrimination. And we've heard calls from many sectors regarding the need for a new, a comprehensive, an open, and a more honest national dialogue on what's happening as far as STDs and sexual health is concerned. Clearly, we're also dealing with dynamic contexts, social contexts and environments as well, changing demography, cultural norms and values, political and social contexts. And certainly at the beginning of this conference, we heard about the importance of ensuring that we're putting in place infrastructures that will withstand political changes and shifts, that will withstand shifts in cultural norms moving forward. So it's really important that we think about a frame that can help us to think about our prevention activities more holistically. Finally, it's absolutely clear that we're dealing with multiple overlapping epidemics, which require a systemic change in our healthcare delivery system and the ways in which we're thinking about the prevention and control of our infectious diseases. Now, you may ask, well, what's wrong with the current system? Why don't we try and do more with what we currently have? And you will argue, one could argue that we have a traditional, very strong, tried and proven vertical prevention approach for STDs, for HIV, for viral hepatitis. Why not use that system and further enhance it? Well, we know that there are limitations of the vertical prevention approach. It may not readily address clients' co-infections. It may not address other associated syndemics which are driving these epidemics, for example, the syndemics of drug use or poverty, high rates of incarceration, for which we need structural interventions to really make a true change in the impact on these infectious diseases. The traditional vertical approach may not offer comprehensive or holistic responses to the prevention needs of clients and communities. And many of you in the field are acutely aware of this when you're having to deal with your own patients and you're seeing the multiple needs that those patients and clients are actually presenting with. The vertical prevention approach may not be as convenient for clients. In fact, because of this lack of a one-stop shop or a comprehensive approach to dealing with their needs. And clearly, there are issues when it comes to using resources most efficiently, because the vertical approach often tends to result in duplication of services. So as we think about sexual health, I think there are ways in which it can be a wonderful overarching frame. And Eli Coleman, in a publication in 2002, really argued for this overarching frame. He argued that sexual health presents an opportunity for leadership of the health sector to create a better climate for discussion of sexuality, a better climate for access to information and education about sexuality, prevention strategies to include community-based interventions, a better climate for access to care for sexual-related concerns, and a better climate for research in human sexuality and evaluation of programs designed to promote sexual health and responsible sexual behavior. So what we're beginning to think about at the CDC, and indeed with our partners in prevention, is to begin to look at sexual health as a new and exciting and dynamic overarching frame for work. Now, the WHO, the Pan American Health Organization, CICUS, and other groups have really begun to articulate ways in which governments around the world can have a more proactive role to play in promoting sexual health. And there are eight key recurring themes on the government's role. And by government here, I'm not only talking about the federal government, but as you look at this list, please reflect on the role of state government, of tribal governments, of local government in promoting sexual health. Clearly, there's a role in providing political commitment, recognizing that sexual health is, in fact, a fundamental human right, and that it takes the responsibility of promoting good sexual health. Government clearly has a role in developing explicit policies that can create a framework for effective sexual health programs and initiatives and activities to take place. Government clearly has a role to play in funding research, developing a research agenda, stimulating research to understand concepts of sexual health, stimulating research to look at operational research, behavioral surveillance, and to really begin to unpack some of the factors which have been discussed previously regarding sexualization, the role of sex, role of relationships, power dynamics, etc. Government clearly has a role to play in developing legislation, laws to protect sexual rights, which are necessary to protect sexual health. And we know that there are many laws currently in our own country which need to be modernized, which need to be strengthened to protect sexual health, whether it is to protect the vulnerable from exploitation or to protect the rights of sexual minorities, which are essentially fundamental human rights. Government has a really strong role to play in education, in ensuring that there is universal access to age-appropriate and comprehensive sexuality education across the lifespan. And this is really important. We're not only talking about adolescents here, we're speaking about comprehensive education and awareness across the lifespan. Clearly, we know the role of government in providing sufficient infrastructure for the diagnosis, treatment, and management of the adverse outcomes of sexual behaviors or sexual attitudes and lifestyles. And certainly, the government has a role to play in supporting the infrastructure of professionals and paraprofessionals specializing in sexual concerns and problems as necessary. Finally, these organizations argue that there are two other roles of government. One, providing adequate surveillance, being necessary to monitor both the biomedical as well as the behavioral markers of sexual health concerns and problems, and to inform effective health policy interventions. And finally, government has a role to play in influencing culture, promoting a culture of openness to sexual health, promoting a culture of the prioritization of sexual health. And as you've heard from the previous speaker this morning, this can involve beginning to look at the national discourse on sexualization, beginning to look at the culture around how we actually relate to and engage on sexual matters within our society, and the degree to which public health messages regarding threats to sexual health can be discussed openly and honestly. So in the last few minutes then, what I'd like to do is to perhaps reflect on how the CDC, working in partnership with ASHO and our other partners in prevention, are beginning to look at a public health approach to promoting sexual health in the United States. We are at a very early phase of this journey, and the purpose of this plenary this morning is to engage you, engage your thoughts, and begin this national dialogue around sexual health. So what do we want to achieve? There's been a group of us working at CDC over the past year beginning to think about the concept of sexual health and what we'd like to see. Our vision is that we, as a public health agency, would use a public health approach to promote age-appropriate sexual health consistent with the best available evidence, including healthy and responsible sexual behavior for all Americans over their life course. And there are a few things within this definition which are key nuggets for us to hold on to. First of all, we are a public health agency, therefore we're committed to using a public health approach. We are committed to using the best available evidence based upon our role in promoting best evidence and best evidence-based practices, and that we view sexual health as occurring for all Americans over the life course. It's not just for adolescents, it's not just for older Americans, it's throughout the life course, and it must be age appropriate. We have identified and articulated a goal for our activities, and this is to improve individual and public health by promoting age-appropriate sexual health and healthy sexual behaviors for all people, free of coercion throughout the lifespan. So as a strategic priority for the CDC, we really view the public health approach as being a critical one. This is based upon the core principles of what we do for other public health approaches for disease management or control by identifying the problem, identifying risk and protective factors, developing and testing interventions, and implementing and further evaluating those interventions that have demonstrated effectiveness. So there's six potential objectives for what we'd like to achieve in this work at the CDC. And again, I'm really keen to hear from you this morning in the Q&A session regarding these objectives and ways in which we should be enhancing these objectives moving forward. The first objective is to work towards increasing healthy, responsible, and respectful sexual behaviors and attitudes in the population for all Americans. Second, to increase the ability and awareness to make healthy and responsible choices which are free of coercion. Thirdly, to promote healthy human sexuality, healthy sexual functioning, healthy relationships, and respectful human rights, sexual rights for all persons throughout the lifespan. Fourthly, to optimize and educate about reproductive health choices. Fifthly, to increase access to effective preventive, screening, treatment, and support services that promote sexual health. And finally, to decrease the adverse individual and public health outcomes, including HIV STDs, viral hepatitis, unintended pregnancies, and sexual violence. So as we are thinking about concrete ways in which we can move forward with a sexual health agenda, here are six objectives that we would like to focus on as a public health agency. There are some initial activities that we've already begun at CDC as far as promoting this priority is concerned. We are currently in the midst of developing new strategic frameworks for sexual health. We're developing an overarching approach to promoting sexual health in the form of a green paper or a discussion paper that will be available for public comment. And we're also developing population-specific approaches for men who have sex with men and for adolescents, really looking at changing the frame from disease prevention to sexual health for these population subgroups. Our CDC colleagues working with external partners have brought together key CDC stakeholders. We've clarified goals, objectives, and tactics. We are engaging leadership both within and across HHS. We're building a new coalition on sexual health with external stakeholders. And we're discussing this concept of sexual health with our advisory committees, getting early input on this journey as we think about the change in this frame and the adoption of this new paradigm. The sexual health discussion paper, or the green paper, will really help us to outline a framework and a strategic approach for implementing a public health approach to promoting sexual health in the United States. The discussion paper will build upon the Surgeon General's call to action to promote sexual health and responsible sexual behavior, which you heard from Dr. John Douglas yesterday, was released in 2001. And this discussion paper will include our vision, goals, objectives, and key strategies and plans for the next 3 to 5 years. We are also planning to hold a technical consultation on the public health approach to promoting sexual health in the spring of 2010. And in the time that I have available, I won't have a lot of time to go through some of the population-specific work that we're doing, but I just wanted to highlight to you some of the activities that we're doing with our MSM sexual health work. Since 2008, we've established a cross-center work group on MSM sexual health. The National Center has provided funding to health departments to assess MSM HIV prevention activities. We're expanding our HIV testing initiative to include MSM of all races to further expand our HIV testing efforts. We're consulting with experts to discuss prevention perspectives on serosorting among MSM and to really beginning to look at developing guidance for safer sex for men who have sex with men. We're looking at co-funding an MSM sexual health research agenda setting workshop with the National Institutes of Health to begin to think of a new research agenda to look more holistically at MSM sexual health. We are in the midst of developing a cross-center strategic framework for MSM sexual health. And as many of you are aware, the President's FY11 budget seeks funding to enhance MSM and transgender prevention activities. And we are delighted that the administration has certainly prioritized a new look at prevention and sexual health among men who have sex with men. So in summary, sexual health, as you've heard this morning, is more than disease prevention and control. It really is a state of physical, emotional, mental, and mental well-being in relation to sexuality. And we certainly believe that it presents a new paradigm to communicate, to coordinate, to advocate, and to educate. Our vertical programs at NCHSDP are committed to greater collaboration and integration, providing more comprehensive prevention services, and to use our available resources more efficiently and wisely. We certainly believe that adopting a public health approach to sexual health is fully aligned with CDC's commitment to evidence-based population health. And as we move forward with this new strategic approach and this paradigm, it will require vision, it will require leadership, it will require clarity of purpose, it will require specificity of our strategies, good governance, resourcing, and most importantly, collaboration across a range of sectors to be successful. We are committed that this will not be a flash in the pan initiative. We are committed that this will be an initiative which will have teeth and which will have longevity. We're looking at a new paradigm for strengthening and enhancing our work in prevention, and we look forward to having you as our partners in this journey. Thank you.
Please. Isn't this amazing? So interesting. Okay, we do have time for some questions. We have a microphone here, a microphone there, and I'm sure there's one. Oh, I see two more over here. Yes, ma'am.
I am Monica Rodriguez from the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the U.S., SECUS. This is not a question, it's a comment. It is refreshing to be at a CDC conference and hear the term sexual health spoken from the podium in writing publicly. That's never been done before in my experience. So thank you, Dr. Fenton, for your leadership. in bringing this, and we look forward to working with CDC and everyone in this room to help this initiative move forward and stay. Thanks.
Thank you. We agree. Sevgi.
Morning. Thank you. Wonderful morning. I was just wondering whether the first speaker could take a few seconds to talk about the role of early childhood development in sexualization and objectification of sexuality, et cetera.
Sure. I think this is an area that needs to be looked at more. But you're right that different developmental ages require different approaches to sexuality. When one of the worries about sexualization of very young girls is that they're not even really able to understand, they don't have the cognitive capacity to understand what sex means and so forth. So I don't know if I have a summary yet, but I think that this is something that really that we do need to look at, that that different developmental stages require different approaches and that we absolutely need to be thinking in a developmental way.
Dan.
Hi, thanks both of you for your presentations. I'm Dan Wolfeiler from California. And I was really struck by the image of, instead of trying to get babies not to crawl, that we clean up some of the mess that they're crawling in. And I'm wondering how we can, both as government agencies and in partnership with our community partners, work to clean up some of the mess that you really alluded to, Professor, in the earlier part of the talk, which is the private sector marketing these images, this constant objectification of ourselves, and how do we do that in a way that doesn't come across as puritanical? If the government tries to do it alone, we can only predict the success. But I worry that, Dr. Fenn, in your presentation, I didn't see a mention of how do we directly address the role of the private sector? How do we either build partnerships with them, build collaborations, or when those collaborations aren't forthcoming, be willing to exert the same kind of pressure that we have in other areas of public health, for example, injury prevention, tobacco prevention, obesity?
This is a great, great question, and I think a very challenging one. There are many other ways in which the media and the broader culture are not healthy for any of us, including our children. I think that governmental efforts can be appropriate. Individual efforts can go a long ways. So individual parents and families who are making different choices for what to buy, something that is recommended. But also activism, and I didn't have time for it in this talk, but there are some really exciting examples of grassroots activism around these issues. The Pussycat Dolls, Hasbro a few years ago, wanted to introduce a line of dolls for four-year-olds, basically based on the Pussycat Dolls. And there was a strong outcry against that, led in part by the Campaign for Commercial Free Childhood. And they pulled it. And girls themselves have been doing some activism around this as well. So I think as individuals working together with grassroots activism, and I think that there is a role as well for the government. Did you want to add?
So Dan, thank you for your question. I think cleaning up the mess is a wonderful metaphor for what needs to be done, but I think the core principles of our action must remain consistent. We need to define what the mess is. We need to define what is the best evidence regarding cleaning up that mess, and we need to think about how best to prioritize our actions to doing so. And I think those three steps are going to be important as we move forward with thinking about the sexual health frame. You're absolutely correct that part of what we're doing with sexual health is creating a new dialogue, but also a very different type of coalition that will really look more expansively at what we're trying to achieve with the prevention and control of our infectious diseases and the promotion of sexual health. And the private sector involvement is critical. We're already doing quite a bit of new private sector partnerships and engagement with our HIV and STD prevention work. My vision is that this will expand greatly as we begin to strengthen this dialogue on sexual health. And we're hoping to bring new private sector and new non-traditional partners to the table in conceptualizing the way forward with this initiative. So we're very committed to new partnerships for this.
Wonderful, thank you.
Dr. Fenton, Thank you very much for your presentation, and I'm thrilled to hear your CDC willing to collaborate and cooperate with other people from the private sector. At the moment, I know of a small company which working for the last 20 years to produce an alternative to the condom to empower women in case the condom is not an option for her. And I'd be more than happy to talk further outside that.
Thank you
again, and I would look forward to collaboration and cooperation with the CDC.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Fenton. I started doing sexuality education in the 70s, and I'm very aware of the politics involved in doing so. And I'm wondering, given the situation with the response to healthcare reform, what's going to happen when the public and when the Congress in general learns about what you're planning on doing, and how much has Congress been involved?
You know, one of the things I think we've all learned is that we can't begin to do what's right if we're going to be afraid. And I think you know, the data are clear. We can either continue to do the same thing to get the same unsatisfactory outcome, or we can really begin to address this as it, at its root cause. And what you're hearing here is our commitment to begin to tackle the root cause of what's really driving these epidemics within the United States, and to look at a response which is far more sustainable, far more acceptable, and far more in tune with the lives of people who are affected. Now, the key to your question, though, is noting that this is not a partisan effort. It's not coming from one side of the aisle, and we are committed to engaging all in this movement. And that's really important, because if we're thinking about longevity and sustainability, we have to engage everyone in this. Everyone has to understand the importance of what we're trying to achieve. And so I can't make promises about the political context or environment, but I can make promises about the ways in which we're going to approach this problem and the ways in which we're going to tackle this strategy moving forward.
May I ask you one follow-up question? You've been working on this for a year now, and I'm just wondering what response you've had from legislators.
So I'll tell you about some of the responses we've had. It's been really wonderful, because when you initially speak to colleagues about what we're doing, there's first this look of panic and incredulousness on their face. And then when you sort of walk them gently through about the rationale and the approach and the fact that we're going through this in a very considered, evidence-based approach, A, colleagues become more relaxed, and B, colleagues become excited about this new paradigm and this new frame. And I think this is something which is has been experienced by so many colleagues in the room as they begin to talk about sexual health. We have got to take this on, and this is part of having that honest dialogue, which I mentioned. Thanks.
Okay,
We
have a couple more questions, and we're really actually out of time. But just so that you know, I would love to spend like the rest of the day talking about this, but unfortunately, they won't let me do that. So, Bruce, if you can make it quick.
I'll make it quick. Thank you. This is a fabulous direction for public health and the CDC. And since we are not afraid of controversy, I would like to point out that there is a very strong public health interest in promoting committed monogamous relationships, and therefore the public health voice needs to be heard in this great national debate on same-sex marriage. It's something we need to get involved in. Thank you.
Bruce, thank you. You know, as we're beginning to think about our approach to promoting sexual health among men who sex with men, it's very clear that the frame that this has to be based upon is one of social justice, and looking at aspects of our society which are causing social and structural barriers to the to prevention for MSM. And it's a very exciting conversation that we're having internally about what a social justice frame for MSM sexual health could look like. So stay tuned. We are going to be bold. We've heard from you and from others in this room of the need for national leadership and boldness in our approach, and we're committed to doing that.
Thank you. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I apologize for a rather naive question, but as I was listening to very powerful presentations by both of you, to me the elephant in the room seemed to be gender and gender inequality. And my question to both of you is, you know, as through your mediation model or through the CDC's public health approach, how do you suggest we even begin to address faith-based communities, we begin to address parents and schools to start at the gender inequality and then look at, you know, how boys and girls develop healthy relationship skills? Thank you.
I think that you're absolutely right that that is crucial, and I'll let Kevin tell us how we're gonna do that.
So great question. Again, at the opening ceremony, I mentioned our new strategic plan for the National Center. One of the goals of the strategic plan for the center is to really focus on health equity using a social determinants of health approach. And the social determinants of health approach is explicit about the importance of gender and gender perspectives and tackling gender disparities as a key role of improving social positioning and health outcomes. So as part of all of our discussions, not only are we focusing on poverty, access to healthcare, education, incarceration, but gender and discussions around gender roles and power are really critical. So we are committed to continuing that inclusivity. Thanks.
Wonderful. And the last question before the giant hook comes out.
Kevin, I want to hearken back to Monica's comment about how good it feels to be hearing this at a government meeting. It's like the manhole cover has finally been lifted, light's coming in, we're going to all stand up. And also to remind all of us and to say as a word of support to you that as a community and as a field, as a group of people who are beginning to feel empowered, it's going to be incumbent upon us to be supportive of you, to take the pieces of it in our own organizations that we can do that we know that CDC cannot carry, and to provide you that support. So when the forces of darkness, if the forces of darkness do descend, you know that you have an empowered, strong, supportive community there to help you do it. And thank you again so much.
Wonderful, wonderful.